Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Amelia Bay, a freelance hairstylist working on Broadway and television who is originally from the Quad Cities. Welcome, Amelia.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Now, first of all, I'd like to say that we are practicing social distancing for this interview. You're quarantining in Michigan. I'm in Iowa, and our producer, Jared Johnson, who is working remotely, is also in Iowa. And, you know, the one good thing about the current COVID-19 crisis is that I'm finally able to record an interview with you. Your schedule is much less hectic.
Yeah, I'm really excited this finally worked out. I've got lots of free time.
Now, when New York City shut down, you were working on the filming of Law and Order, SVU, or Special Victims Unit. When did you learn that the remaining season was canceled because of the pandemic?
So there was a lot of rumors and speculation going on, and I believe it was the day after the NBA shut down that day we were like, there was a lot of rumors going around, and we finally got, I think I got the text the day after that on April 12th that they had suspended filming for the rest of the season. And then the next day I got another text from Bull, another TV show I was working on, and they also had shut down. And then I got another text from another show I was working on, and it just kind of, all of a sudden all my work just kind of disappeared. And no, you know, a lot of the shows suspended the rest of their season. And as a freelancer, you know, I'm not on any kind of salary, they owe me nothing. So I just kind of, that was it.
Now, while you recently transitioned to the television industry, you worked on Broadway for quite a few years prior to that. And yeah. I was surprised to learn that in theater, it's rare to use an actress's own hair. And that yeah. as a stylist, you primarily use wigs. Why is that?
There's a multitude of reasons. You know, if the production has the budget, wigs are a really good way to keep continuity and consistency so that every show, 8 shows a week, the hair looks the same. The stylist has full control and they're not at the, they don't have to worry about if the actress is going to come in with dirty hair or maybe, you know, she decided to dye her hair. So it gives the actors freedom to do what they want with their hair, and we don't have to kind of put a contract on their hair. But it also gives the show an easier time maintaining the integrity of the design, especially if it's 1930s, very specific. Those styles could take an hour and a half to get perfect every night on the actress, and then they have to pay them an hour and a half before every show. And, you know, it actually becomes more expensive in a way to use the actor's hair.
So there's some cost concerns with
yeah,
that.
For sure.
I hadn't really thought about that. And ultimately, you had said that really, if you didn't use a wig, it would be damaging to curl their hair or fix their hair on these period styles.
Yeah, I mean, you're typically using heat styling, whether it's roller sets or, you know, hot irons, and they're 450-degree irons eight times a week. You know, eventually that's going to really start to damage the actor's hair. Then you're getting into coloring costs as well. If you want the actress to be a blonde for the show, you have to maintain her color every couple of weeks to make sure when her roots come in, and then you're putting damage from hair color. So it's a lot easier to just fit them for a custom wig, and then they can kind of take that off at the end of the night and walk away, and you can have that time to restyle the wig for the next day.
How do you create a wig for a show? What are the actual steps you need to go through?
It varies, but if you're making a fully custom wig and the show has the budget to make a fully hand-tied wig, a lot of times, you know, like the leading lady and that kind of thing will definitely have a fully customized wig with every individual hair tied into it. And you start with calling the actress in for a fitting. And you take a bubble of their, like a kind of a shape of their head with saran wrap and clear tape and Sharpie out the hairline. And then you take that, put it on a wig block, pad that out, and then you start laying your foundation for it. So we use like a really fine netting called like lace. And we lay that out, and you then hand knot each hair onto the little bars of the lace to create a custom wig.
It's incredible to think that you hand knot these. So how long would it typically take to create a wig?
It varies so much, but it could be, I mean, it could be anywhere up to, you know, 80, 100 hours, depending on the, you know, if you're doing it on film lace, it's so delicate. You have to be so careful not to rip the little bars. And, you know, you're using really, really fine. We even use mohair in the front, which is, you know, animal hair that's just like super, super baby fine, so that it looks like it's growing out of the scalp. So that takes a lot more time and manipulation. But if you're making a theater wig and, you know, you're doing a wefted back where you're not hand tying it, you could knock it out in, you know, 10 hours or something.
Mm-hmm. Where does this happen? Obviously, it doesn't happen at the theater. Are there specific places, specific shops that you go to?
Yeah, there's ventilating shops and that kind of a thing all over New York City. It's its own animal, but there's all different ventilating shops, and sometimes they'll source them out from, you know, other parts of the country or the world or whatever. But most designers have, you know, their own shop or their own group of people that they like to use. That ventilate for them.
It's so interesting to think about all the work that goes on before a show starts. After the casting is decided upon, how far in advance do you need to start working on these before the previews begin?
It all varies. And that's more of the, you know, the designer's thing. The supervisor kind of, you know, comes in maybe a couple weeks before tech starts, just to kind of help them get all their ducks in a row and get ready. But really, as soon as rehearsals start and as soon as you get a cast list, that's when you can really start getting those actors in for fittings and start crafting all of this. And I'm sure that there are design meetings even beforehand, just to get the concepts, with the costume designer, collaborating with all the other elements of production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when you worked on Sunset Boulevard, which starred Glenn Close, there were hundreds of wigs that needed to be fitted for that single production. You know, and as a viewer, when you go to the theater, it seems, or watch a film, it seems so seamless. And that's part of the magic, I suppose.
Yeah, we had 8 people just for hair and makeup on that show. One personal for Glenn for her hair, one for her makeup. And then we had 6 people in the room for the rest of the ensemble and the whole rest of the cast. And all of us did quick changes and, you know, maintained the wigs every day and came in and washed them and restyled them. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. But that's kind of the beauty of it. The goal is to walk out of the theater and not be noticed as a hairstylist, because that means you did your job and that you're not distracting from the storytelling.
You've been working as a hair supervisor recently. What is the difference between a hair designer and a hair supervisor for a particular show?
The designer is the person that implements the design, and they decide what the character is going to look like to create that picture. And then the supervisor's job is to maintain the integrity of the design. So they'll often have an assistant, maybe even a third or a fourth or a fifth or a sixth hairstylist that is working with them as a team to create the exact same design every night that the designer has put in place, and making sure that the parting is always on the right side and that the wave comes right over the left eyebrow. And, you know, like, just your goal is to have your designer be able to come, if they ever pop into the show, you know, that they would say that's what I put in place, and that you've done your job if you've done them proud in maintaining their design. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's so many details. It sounds like almost like a symphony of sorts. I can imagine the swirl of activity around each person's hair, having it be so precise. Now you're working in television now. You've kind of made a little bit of a transition. How does working in TV differ from working on Broadway for you?
Oh, it's a completely different animal. Hours-wise, energy-wise, everything. You know, you walk into the theater and you typically have a 5-hour day on a one-show day. You know, you get there an hour and a half before curtain, and you get all your wigs styled and ready to go and do all your presets for the show. And then you do the show, which is usually anywhere from like an hour and a half to 3 hours sometimes. And then you put your wigs away, maybe set them for the night so that, you know, they can sleep in whatever shape they need to be, and then you walk away. And it's usually, it's the same thing every day, which is good and bad. It's nice to have routine. But for TV, you know, you don't know your call until sometimes a half hour before you leave work, or you don't know your official call until a half hour after you leave work. And you could be leaving work at 2 a.m. and not know that you're called until 2:30 a.m. and you have to get up the next day at, you know, noon or 10 a.m. or whatever it is. So you can go into work for TV at 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. and you could be working 2 hours or 18 hours. So it's completely different. And you're doing different things every day. You know, you don't have the same structure that you do within Broadway. You're doing whatever you're filming for that day. So if it's a hair heavy day, you might be run ragged by the end of the day. And if it's a day where, you know, it's a couple of guys on screen with just their buzzed head, then you might just kind of be trying to pinch yourself to stay awake. So you never know what you're going to get thrown.
Right. I didn't think about the fact that filming, shooting outside, outdoors, would create some havoc, you know, a lot more uncertainty.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't control the elements. So having an actress and you curl their hair and then all of a sudden it's so humid and it starts raining in the middle of the woods and you don't have any power and you have to text someone to quick bring you have a PA bring you a cordless iron from your trailer and you're trying to make it happen. You're not trying to hold up the shot. I mean, it can be, there's days where I would walk away from set and just be emotionally and mentally drained. But it's satisfying. And then there would also, you know, there's be days where I didn't really touch any hair, but I'm there just in case something, you know, goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. You've worked on one of my favorite TV series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
And also worked on Monsterland.
Yeah.
And that's coming out this fall.
Yeah. I'm hoping still it's on track with everything that's going on in the world right now, but I'm really excited to see that one. It's a new Hulu series and it was the first season. So it'll be fun to see it come to life after working on it for 7 months or so.
I didn't realize that you do this, that you take photos, continuity photos, to make sure that from scene to scene, say if you're filming another day, that things look just exactly as they did when you last filmed.
Totally. That's one of the main parts of doing hair for TV. And you are often working with the actress's actual hair. So if she comes in one day with curly hair and the next day she comes in with straight hair, you have to kind of figure out how to match her natural curl texture that she came in with the first day or whatever you're thrown. Sometimes you'll do reshoots and the actor will come in and they've dyed their hair or something, you know, and you have to kind of think on the spot and throw in some root spray or whatever it is. And thank God you take as many pictures of the monitor and the actor as you can so that you can reference those if you ever have to do a reshoot or match the same look or whatever it is.
Now, you're originally from the Quad Cities and you graduated from Pleasant Valley High School in 2010. What was your time in theater like there? And what influence do you think your education there had on your eventual career?
It was great. It was the thing that made me want to work in theater. I think my fondest memories from high school theater was just like, I remember my freshman year, I designed the makeup for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I was so excited that I got to be the makeup designer as a freshman. And I just remember the warm, like loving, family-like environment that the theater is. And everybody just became my family. And I think that that's what appealed to me so much, where I was like, you know, I want to do what I love, which is hair and makeup for theater, like as a career. And I guess the pinnacle of that was Broadway. So that's what I made my goal. Mm-hmm. So I think that that gave me, you know, what like my goal for my career, which is huge.
And it's a great story. After you left, you know, the Quad Cities, you specifically chose the North Carolina School of the Arts. How did you decide to go there and what degree did you earn?
I went to about 5 different colleges and did the visits and everything. And I decided on North Carolina School of the Arts because I didn't realize this until I got there, but they actually offered a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree specifically in hair and makeup design, which is what I wanted to do. All of the other schools that I went to only offered, you know, your bachelor degree in theater tech or a very vague umbrella of the technical aspect of theater. So I decided that that was the only place that I wanted to go to. And there's one other school in the U.S., Cincinnati Opera, that offers a Bachelor of Fine Arts in hair and makeup, but those are the only two schools in the nation. So I kind of decided that that's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. And besides learning the techniques of hair design, you also had to study and come to understand the period or historical changes in hair that have occurred over time.
Yeah, we had a whole class my freshman year, hair history and styling. And we went through, you know, everything from ancient Roman times to contemporary present day hair. So you went through your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, learning the differences and why they did that styling for that period. And I think that's really important to have, especially when I have worked on, you know, Miss Maisel and The Hunt, which is a new show coming out with Al Pacino, and A Plot Against America, which is 1940s. It's a show I worked on with Winona Ryder. So all of those different periods and nuances, I think, are really important to have as a foundation going into those period shows.
After you graduated and left North Carolina, you were able to land several internships, but your first big job was Flashdance, the musical. And that was a traveling show. What was working on the road like?
It was insane, but I wouldn't change a minute of it. We were on a non-equity bus and truck tour where we did a lot of one-nighters. So we'd be in one city and we'd have to pack up that same day and get on the road and sleep on the bus and wake up and do it all over again at the next place. And it was crazy, but it was the perfect time to do it just out of college. And I learned so much and it was such a great experience. I really had a good time.
And the hair, I still laugh when I think about the hair from that film, which was early 80s. Big perm hair.
Oh, it was such fun hair to get to do because it was that big fun 80s hair. We even had, you know, in the movie, there's that strip club that she kind of slips into with the wrong crowd. So we got to do all of those crazy neon day glow hairstyles and makeup and lots of crimping, and it was a lot of fun.
When you were on tour, it was also interesting to find out that that not everybody travels. When you go from city to city, you pick up artists just for that particular show that's being performed in that one place.
Yeah, we have they really can't afford to travel everybody. So they'll typically just travel one or two people from each department. So I was the only hairstylist, but when we got to a city, I picked up three additional hairstylists. And I didn't know who I was going to get and what their capabilities would be. I've gotten people that had never used a curling iron. I had gotten people that that probably could style hair better than me. You just never know what you're going to get. So that was definitely the most challenging part of it, is training a crew to do this crazy show with all these quick changes where you really can't miss a beat, or the actress might go on stage bald, and that's on you. And so that was the crazy pressure part of it. And then as soon as they learn it, you have to leave them behind and train a new group. So it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Now, after Flashdance, the musical closed, you return to New York City. And I'm curious about how you got your name out there. How did you start that next phase of your career?
It's all about word of mouth in my industry. It really is. It's who you know, and you know, if you want to try to make good impressions with everybody that you get the opportunity to work with, and so that they want to hire you again. And it's all word of mouth. I went and, you know, hit the pavement and dropped off my resumes at all the different stage doors, and got a call. My first call was from Aladdin, and that was the first Broadway show that I got to swing at.
And when you say swing, what does that mean?
It's essentially like you're swinging in to fill in for somebody that might call in sick that day. They might have injured themselves and be out for 6 weeks and you're filling in for them, or they might just be taking a vacation in Mexico and they need somebody to cover that week for them. So they train you to do the, you know, everything that they need to do from the beginning to the end of the show and all of that. And then you swing in and take over. And sometimes you have a half hour notice and they say, can you please come right now? And you're like, oh my God, I've, you know, you have to run tracks cold sometimes, which means you've never learned it or anything. They hand you notes and they throw you on stage, you know, on backstage, and you try to figure out which wig goes on which actor. And it's definitely an adrenaline rush swinging, and especially on some of those harder shows.
It sounds stressful too, but
it is, it's fun.
What would you say has been your greatest professional achievement so far?
I have always wanted to, you know, be a Broadway supervisor. That's kind of what always has appealed to me the most. Once I got into this industry and I realized, you know, there's the designer and there's the ventilators and there's all these different roles. And so I really wanted to supervise, and I got to finally do that last year. I opened Be More Chill around this time, actually. And it's a new Broadway show that had come out, and that was probably my greatest achievement thus far. It was a really, really cool feeling to be able to open a Broadway show as the supervisor.
I just read that Be More Chill is coming to Chicago. It's supposed to open in July. Now we'll see with the pandemic if that plays out. But I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Now you also said that with your recent switch to television, you're starting the trek all over again. Is it exciting to move on to a new challenge?
Yeah, for sure. I always like to challenge myself, and you don't really learn. There's a point where, you know, you kind of feel like you've learned all that you can from one area and you want to expand your knowledge. So I felt like the scariest thing to do would to be jump into something brand new. So that's what I wanted to do.
Finally, you know, you have some big changes coming up in your life and are getting married in August, I understand. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. And your fiance is a Broadway actor. And I am imagining that there's a certain camaraderie that working in the same stressful business brings to you. Do you think that's true for the two of you?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really nice to be able to understand the stress and the other person's industry without being competitive in it. Like if we were both actors, I think that would be really hard. and, you know, if he gets cast in a show and, you know, I didn't or something, but it's nice to be able to understand each other's industries and stresses and all of that without any kind of competition or anything like that.
Well, Amelia Bay, thank you so much for talking today. It was delightful. And I certainly hope that New York City reopens relatively soon when it's safe and that you can get back to the work that you love.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting with me, Caroline. I really appreciate it.
Originally from the Quad Cities, Amelia Bay now lives in New York City working as a freelance hairstylist on television and on Broadway. This has been Caroline Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK.
Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.